No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it.
Hello, and welcome to Know You Tell It, a hybrid story incubator slash performance series. Each Know You Tell It participant develops their own nonfiction piece on the page, then switches with a partner to perform each other's work on stage. Because nothing informs your story like hearing someone else perform your story.
This episode, we're featuring a pair of stories from our evening, Lock and Key. In our first piece, author Stella Kaufman has devised a coping mechanism for dealing with the slights, pain, and humiliation life can deal out. It's a story of how we negotiate memory, especially in our current technological age, who we share with, and how, and what we keep private. Here's Stella's story, The Vault, as performed by Richard Lovejoy.
I sat on the floor on the multicolored rug in kindergarten class. The teacher was going over letters of the alphabet. I remember thinking that I knew the alphabet, but wondering if I had the guts to volunteer to recite the first part. Painfully shy back then, I chose to remain quiet. The teacher went on. H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. Wait, what? L, M, N, O were separate letters? Whoa, I thought they were one letter. H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. It was like the teacher had dropped the alphabet bomb. I remember that feeling in the pit of my stomach. I was one relieved five-year-old, grateful I did not end up volunteering lest anyone figure out my ignorant secret. That was my first experience that would make its way into the vault. The vault is a place to store those memories of childhood humiliation, tween angst, adolescent unrest. It is a place for the adult stories you never share, the one night, the next morning. The memory that comes rushing back and then must be stored away to be revealed, never. Well, the vault is where things go into permanent hiding. Some can be brought out when determined safe by the owner. Some things, harmless enough, make an occasional appearance in the safe company of good friends and lovers, or possibly after a second martini. You see, sometimes memories, like the kindergarten alphabet story, find themselves in the vault because of the mortal fear or embarrassment they caused the vault owner at the time of the incident. Of course, like most stories, the little traumas of growing up, the statute of limitations, is only as long as the embarrassment attached to the incident. So for what are, in reality, harmless childhood memories, they make their way out of the vault as humorous childhood recollections to be shared every once in a while, sweet moments of youthful vulnerability. As we transition into the awkward middle school years, there are many opportunities that could become fodder for the vault. I may know of such a story where a shy little girl wrote, "I like you," on Kenny's Valentine in fifth grade, and he laughed and showed everyone, and she just put her head on her desk and cried. I mean, that's just... that's just an example of something that could happen. Again, a harmless anecdote now, but so painful at the time. That's the least threatening level of the vault, though these tales may remain put away in safekeeping most of the time. Moving through my teens and early 20s, some of the more humorous memories stayed in the vault for only a short time. In today's culture, though, thanks to the introduction of camera phone technology, they likely would not have made it into the vault at all, possibly having been Instagrammed for digital posterity. In our instantaneous digital world, it is sometimes more difficult, seemingly impossible, to store many of these unflattering moments away in the vault. Gone is the day of tearing up the painfully unflattering picture or cutting out the person you don't like from a photograph. You can still delete, of course, if you're the only one that caught the moment, but untagging does not provide the same closure. Trust me. Well, some of these embarrassing incidents do end up thrown in the vault with the hopes of being quickly forgotten by everyone. I am pretty sure that the woman who was secretly videoed on the subway can't put that memory away in the vault anytime soon. No longer can we snap photos without care, laughing and joking about destroying the negative. When I think about how difficult it is to keep those humiliating moments a secret nowadays, I shudder. I am so thankful that high school, college, and frankly the first half of my 20s took place before cell phone cameras. Like when I was waiting for friends, standing in front of my car around 19 years old, looking pretty good, I thought, in my lemon yellow wraparound skirt. And as I stood outside my car, some of the passerby reactions confirmed it. I reached into my car to get a sweater as it was starting to get a little breezy, when I realized that it was getting breezy because my wraparound skirt was, how should I say, becoming unwrapped. Mortified even at the memory of this, I can only be thankful that this memory is safely stored away in the vault, as was possible before the day of the cell phone camera. The secret will remain with me and the 400 or so people who caught a glimpse as they drove down the road. And that's as viral as I care to remember it. Thank you. Well, I'm in no way suggesting any sort of multiple personality issue. There is a woman who lives in the vault who speaks to me sometimes, and whom I hesitate to discuss. While she looks strikingly similar to me, her attitude bears no resemblance to my friendlier disposition. Her thoughts lie more on the dark side. Frankly, she is kind of a bitch. She belongs in the vault where she can have no influence over me. Like when it was 5:30 p.m. on Friday and a person was texting as she walked in front of me. Distracted and, of course, looking down, she wandered from side to side as she walked, taking up the whole sidewalk and making it impossible for me to overtake her. I tried to move to the side of the seat where the street widened, but she managed to go at the precise speed and move over just enough so that I couldn't get by. She was completely oblivious. I resigned myself to being stuck behind this person, but I was not happy about it. As we continued to walk down the street, I came up with a brilliant idea, fueled by that nasty woman who lives in the vault. Why don't we give texters their own lane? They could all wander around in one lane while they text and let the rest of us go about the business of walking. But that would take up too much room, unless we combine the texting lane with the bike lane. The satisfaction of seeing the texter's face, finally forced to look up, cell phone flying into traffic, general sows strewn across the Broadway as they both went down. The woman in the vault also came up with no stroller day, or her favorite, block the scooter weekend, where we would stand in front of scooters careening towards us instead of moving out of the way to the horror of oblivious parents half a block behind. You get the picture. I admit to sometimes being amused by these ideas, but the truth is, they will remain deep in the vault. As I've gotten older, my life evolved, and so did the contents of the vault. Some memories, once viewed as too terrifying to even think about removing, are revealed in joking self-deprecation among friends and at parties. On the opposite end, some items in the vault become more complex. The abandonment of my 20s was replaced with new concerns for children. Some parental fears must be kept in the vault for fear of passing them on, like a cheap green ashtray that no one wants to keep but can't give away. Even the less dramatic concerns can get stored away to keep them from becoming transferred fears. We sat in the backyard on that hot valley night, looking at the curly-haired 6-year-old girl who spent the summer day at the local college campus at soccer camp. She looked curiously for some time up at the roof of our one-story ranch house. There were 2 diving boards at the pool camp, at the pool at camp. One was normal and one was really high, taller than our house. She looked up again at the roof with a broad grin. That's the one that I went on. My husband glanced at me, muttering, "Do we want her doing that?" I looked at him. I think she already did. Well, hearing that the platform high dive had 2 lifeguards seemed like a mixed blessing. The choice to put our fears into the vault just then was not an easy one, but passing on our fear to her seemed much worse. During emotionally difficult times, the vault can actually become a coping mechanism. During the years of a troubled marriage, I used the vault to self-medicate. A quick shove of hurt into the vault served to protect against feeling any hurtful remark or action for more than a moment. I became so skilled at this that I could actually tuck things away before they were done happening. While I look at this as a survival mechanism, this quick infusion of numbing medication did not serve me well in the long run. In fact, I am certain that this would be considered vault abuse. I learned that it is dangerous to use the vault as a temporary dumping ground. Just like any other storage facility, there is a risk of forgetting that you haphazardly threw things in there. They are destined to become part of the background, a basis for an unpleasant buildup of junk. Like a mountain of dirty laundry, there is a corner of the vault that is a pile of miscellaneous thoughts and secrets randomly tossed in over the years. Painful periods of insecurity and self-doubt get stored away until the fear is addressed. The adult version of that kindergarten child with the alphabet secret. Like walking into a gym class after a decade of staying away. Or worrying about being too old to sign up for that writing workshop you've always wanted to take. Of course, where vulnerability is both the cause and the antidote, it always feels like there is a lot at stake. Nagging regrets are added to the pile, like the things I wish I never said to my mother, or the things I want to say to my own children. The list of things I wish I hadn't said isn't going anywhere. But there might be time for the safe removal of the things I wish I could say. In this same muddled corner lies unsaid fears and secret worries that I dare not remove even for a fleeting moment, lest they become self-fulfilling prophecies. Also in the mess, unkept New Year's resolutions proclaimed too loudly. The journals I started in January 1st and abandoned by Groundhog Day. Unfulfilled dreams lie dormant, occasionally removed for examination in hopes of learning for the reason they are unfulfilled. On the top of the stack is a certain insecurity that follows. Is it too late for those dreams? Maybe it's time for that 5-year-old to raise her hand. The embarrassment of things I know and things I don't. Items in this unkempt corner can remain hidden in the disarray indefinitely. Deciding what goes in and out of the vault becomes a more intentional decision as we grow to realize the benefits from the vulnerability that comes with divulging pieces of ourselves. My father used to quote my grandfather, "Poco hablar es bueno para el cuerpo." The literal translation, "Little talk is good for the body." Although as a family we were encouraged to share feelings, we were raised to keep important things within our nuclear family. This pretty much sums up how I was raised to think about offering up too much personal information. Still, there are times where either by chance or by design, I take inventory of some of what has been buried in the vault. Managing the flow of information in and out of the vault often requires conscious thought. As the circle of caring expands in life, all possibilities must be considered. Sometimes it is important to take a feeling or an experience out of the vault, at least for a little while, because sharing it will help someone feel less alone or give someone hope. Somehow, from the recesses of the vault, something positive comes from telling the story. Like all New York City storage units, the vault is getting crowded. I've had it for a long time. And like all good storage spaces, it is sometimes a joy when contents are looked at fondly but rendered useless and discarded, especially in the vault. But unlike your typical storage unit at Manhattan Mini Storage, I can keep adding to this vault as long as necessary, or until technology creates a GPS for my every thought and feeling, until science progresses to where every human thought becomes public anyway. Maybe, with everyone's thoughts out there, mine will be unnoticeable, lost in a global flurry of confidences and unkept promises. I am prepared for my vault's contents to be strewn across a few continents by then. Meanwhile, don't look for the key. I keep it in the vault.
Switching it up, the locked door puzzle introduces us to a childhood home dominated by a narcissistic mother, where refuge comes in the world of computer games. It's a story of how something viewed as childish might actually provide the tools to negotiate adulthood and free us from the dungeons of the past. Here's Stella Kaufman with Richard Lovejoy's The Locked Door Puzzle.
Sitting at my work computer, I am drowning in open tabs. Most are job-related. There are 3 devoted to 3 different personal email accounts. In one, I have up maps for the 2001 Surtek game Wizardry 8. Several others are devoted to my upcoming wedding, including a page of biblical quotes for ceremonies meant to satisfy religious family members without being overtly religious. Quotes like, "When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." Much of the Bible seems by and large outrageous to an atheist, commie, pinko, secular, humanist scourge of society like myself. Are you currently wearing two different fabrics? Congrats, you're a sinner. There's that part in Leviticus where it says slavery is okay. Deuteronomy makes the compelling case that if you run into people in a foreign city who worship a different god, you should kill those people. A surefire way to liven up any vacation. But what about putting away childish things? That seems pretty reasonable, right? I would say absolutely not. Or at least I would say it is an unfair request. Inevitably, we are prisoners to the way we are raised, or not raised, as was my case. By all accounts, I was the easiest child imaginable. A story frequently told by my mother, unfortunately, often while I'm in earshot, is the story of my conception and birth. For reasons which I hope are alarmingly obvious, I will omit most of this story and skip to the part where I entered the world without crying, aced my Apgar, and proceeded to never throw a tantrum or be in any fashion remotely difficult in the way babies typically can be. This nicely foreshadowed my number one flaw in my adult relationships, namely being utterly withholding of whatever I am feeling. For my well-meaning hippie parents, it was a tremendous boon. Having a child is easy, they figured, and then proceeded to get significantly more sleep than the average first-time parents, becoming the envy and scorn of their immediate social circle. At least until my brother entered the picture 15 months later, and proceeded to cry for 4 years straight. Growing up, we think the situations we're in are normal. It isn't until later in adulthood that we begin to see how fucked up our childhoods actually were. The central rule of my house was that my mother's feelings ruled paramount. A textbook narcissist, she had no interest in the words or thoughts of anyone else. She would talk at the dinner table about any inane thing that crossed her mind, telling stories which left out vital information and contained no transitions between beats. Anxiously, she prattled while my brother, father, and I would listen in silence, eating as quickly as we could before scampering away to the blessed quiet of our rooms. Once in my room, I would be released from my managing my mother's needs and emotions and left to my own devices. My preferred method of escape was video games. Which leads me to King's Quest III, To Err is Human. That's right, H-E-I-R. Not ER. This was back in an era where puns as subtitles were considered socially acceptable. Sliding the 5 1/4-inch floppy disks into the drive, I'd listen for the sound of the TV at the other end of the house. If I heard it, it meant my mom would soon be asleep and the chances of some family melodrama erupting would diminish. King's Quest III was a Sierra online adventure game. Adventure games were centered on puzzle solving. You accrue seemingly random inventory items and use them to get past obstacles. The graphics back in the day were EGA, meaning a palette of up to 16 beautiful colors to create lush, realistic landscapes. The story centered on young Prince Alexander, taken prisoner by the evil wizard Mananen and his horrible cat, who was responsible for untold amounts of deaths and reloads with his knack for tripping Alexander on the staircase and sending him into a tumble that always resulted in a snapped neck. The classic puzzle in these games is, of course, the locked door. You're in room or area A, and there's something preventing you from getting to room or area B. Using your inventory items, you need to concoct a way to get past the door. The locked door puzzle that opened the game was your servitude to the evil wizard, Mananen. Mananen's M.O. was hilarious. He would steal babies and raise them as slaves, killing them on their 18th birthday in the off chance they would die. Then he'd start over with a new baby, presumably going through the laborious process of teaching the new child reading and writing and all of the other skills necessary to be a good wizard. How he functioned when the child was just a baby remains a mystery. I suppose he cleaned his own chamber pot at those times, though that seems a demeaning chore for a mighty wizard. The game starts on the cusp of Alexander's 18th birthday. Mananen has kept you in his tower for your entire life. To unlock the door, you need to somehow get rid of him. By reading his spellbook when he isn't looking, you could learn some of his spells, including one which created a cookie that transformed whoever ate it into a cat. Magic. It's useful. Making the magic cookie involved grinding a mandrake root into a powder, adding cat hair and 2 spoons of fish oil. Somehow this resulted in dough. Please bear in mind that video game programmers are not noted for their baking. You then had to knead the highly questionable dough into a cookie and recite the verse. Mandrake root and hair of cat. Mix oil of fish and give a pat. A feline from the one who eats this appetizing magic treat. You followed all of this naturally with the wave of a magic wand. The spell prepared, all that remained was crumbling the cookie into Mananen's porridge and feeding it to him. Poop! He's a motherfucking cat! Alexander was then free to leave the tower, explore the world, and eventually, provided you can solve the seemingly endless barrage of subsequent locked door puzzles, reunite with his true family, the royal family of Daventry. What the game glossed over was that Alexander was stolen by Mananen as a baby and grew up as the wizard's slave. As unpleasant as Mananen was, that's the only reality Alexander knew. Yet this didn't stop him from immediately adapting into a life of freedom and adventure, or prevent him from becoming the absolute picture of perfect nobility once reunited with his parents. My mom, being wrapped up in her own emotional life, was able to provide either my brother or I with any real information. We were never taught about money or instructed on how to accomplish a chore properly. We just had to figure it out on our own or do it poorly. We were never taught to cook or drive or function. My father never pushed back against my mother on anything. Despite his pre-marriage life as a professional bass player, he never taught my brother or me the instrument. Even the dreaded quote-unquote talk never occurred. My parents smoked weed and watched movies, and when movies weren't on, my mother spouted monologues that were full of sound, sometimes contained fury, and always signified nothing. I walked on eggshells all the time, taking care not to upset my mother's delicate emotions, lest she threaten suicide. She was quick to cry and quicker still to play the martyr. My father signaled to my brother and me that the only way to respond to her is to give her everything she asked for. So I ended up with no model for conflict, no practical information, and no earthly idea that any of this was abnormal. Unlike Prince Alexander, I carried these things with me even after my escape. I still struggle not to feel uncomfortable for expressing a preference or having an opinion that isn't whatever you want or whatever you think is best, Mom. As a child of a narcissist, my inclination is to be used like a prop. My mother would show baby me off, boasting about my wonderful silence and manageability. When I got older, straight-A student me was similarly deployed. My brother's disaster of a life, meanwhile, was treated as a weird curiosity. She was eager to claim the good in either of us as solely her own doing, and quick to dismiss her responsibility in the bad. My ability to complete the Herculean task of making a feature film means that she herself has, by the transit of property, I suppose, succeeded at making a feature film. Meanwhile, my brother moving into the spare room of his latest set of in-laws is attributed to him having flaws. Gaming gave me an escape and became the starting point for a lot of my imaginative processes. As I got older, I became aware that though society has no problem with an adult sitting on a couch and passively watching football, there is a weird judgment of actually playing a game as a waste of time. I'm proud to say that I still game to this day, and that many of my most successful artistic endeavors have been gaming-based. For me, gaming is a tool that I use to dismantle the baggage of my childhood. It is a reminder that I could find an identity and be a functional human being. even if my father suffered from undiagnosed PTSD from his time in Nam, or my mother's childhood as one of many children left her so desperate for attention that she couldn't actually take other human beings in. Many would classify gaming as a childish thing to be put aside. The childish things I want to put aside are the inner voices that are constantly cutting me down, telling me that my thoughts and feelings are secondary to everyone else's, that I must tread lightly, because anytime someone is angry or upset, they're going to kill themselves. Games are where I made things happen, seized control, and outsmarted even the most dastardly of wizards. Learning how to utilize the mechanics of a game in an efficient way taught me to utilize the mechanics of real life. As I sit at my desk at work, 18 tabs open on my computer, 5 different programs running, I see my inventory. With this inventory, I'll be able to bypass any obstacle that comes my way. I can get past the locked doors at work. I can navigate the daunting and exciting task of planning a wedding. And I can find a way to continue to push my artistic endeavors further. Somehow, despite my earlier imprisonment, I am functional. I have a job, a fiancé, and a cat, who I believe could have been a wizard. I am lucky to exist in a world where I didn't have to go to war like my father did. I didn't have to witness my best friend get his guts splattered all over my body, alive 1 minute and a pile of gore the next. If that had happened to me, I too might have eschewed all conflict. And unlike my mom, I didn't come from a devastatingly impoverished family where I was forced to take care of my 5 siblings because my sole parent was entirely checked out. In her shoes, I too might yearn to be the center of attention as an adult. We're all prisoners of where we came from. The things we must put aside to become adults are the chains we have inherited. To err is human, after all.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.